Hello everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the ICO's podcast. My name's Hannah Smith. I am the Senior Digital Communications Officer here, and I'm joined by my colleague Ian Diasha, one of the group managers in the Policy Directorate. Today we're going to be talking about a very important part of the new data protection law, which is data protection impact assessments. So I'll get started with my first question, Ian, which is, what is a data protection impact assessment, or DPIA?
Well, a DPIA is a process for building and generating compliance with GDPR, and it actually appears under Article 35 or also in the Data Protection Bill for Law Enforcement Processing. It's a general part of the accountability obligations for controllers, and actually in many ways the concept isn't new. We already have the idea of privacy impact assessments, which the ICO have championed for a long time.
So for our listeners who don't know, what is a privacy impact assessment? Because it's my understanding that DPIAs are going to be somewhat mandatory, whereas a PIA is just currently best practice. Is that right?
Absolutely. A privacy impact assessment isn't a requirement of the Data Protection Act 1998. The ICO do have a code on privacy impact assessments, but that is much more in terms of the Commissioner's duty to forward good practice, and it's that side of the law rather than an actual statutory requirement. Both PIAs and DPIAs require you to look at your intended processing. So really it's to be done at the start of a project. And what you're looking at is the scope of the data you're looking to process and the purpose you're looking to process for. And the key point really is around that impact assessment. It's about looking at whether your intended or envisaged processing is likely to result in risk to data subjects. And it's this element in particular that's emphasised in GDPR, where we have this line around processing likely to result in a high risk to the rights and freedoms of individuals.
Okay, so you're saying that people only have to do a DPIA if they feel that it's going to, the project that they're working on is going to have some kind of impact on the people whose data they're processing, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, effectively, the requirement only comes in where the intended envisaged processing is likely to result in that high risk to individuals. Now, that echoes the general principle of GDPR, which is it's proportionate and risk-based. So what this isn't saying is there is a new statutory requirement for everybody to conduct a full assessment of every type of processing they do. That's not what GDPR is saying, and it's not what the ICO is saying. However, what we are saying is that there is a requirement for you before the 25th of May, ideally, to assess your current processing against some of the checklists that are included in our draft guidance to see whether some of the processing you undertake is likely to hit this threshold of high risk. And we give more detail in our guidance about what high risk means, because it's not a term that's actually defined in GDPR. As I said before, although high risk isn't defined within GDPR itself, they do refer to certain scenarios or circumstances where either due to the sensitivity of the data itself or the intended processing type, so what you plan to do with it, those types of things could put you into that bracket of high risk. Therefore, you need to do an assessment.
So what you're saying is that it might be that someone may not end up doing a DPIA, but they need to have at least, if they are using personal data, they need to have made those early steps to make sure that they have assessed this likelihood and the likelihood to result in risk.
Yeah, and there's probably a few steps kind of in that process. So if we were talking about somebody looking at this from a blank sheet of paper in terms of an intended or envisaged new project, I guess the first question is, does my intended project touch some of these areas of likely to result in high risk, which GDPR does define in more detail? And they are things around automated decision-making, potential profiling, any kind of processing that is likely to result in a significant or legal effect on an individual. It could be processing that involves sensitive personal data or criminal convictions, and it could be processing that results in some kind of lost opportunity or denial of service to an individual. Now, if you're looking at our guidance in terms of where you would find those lists and those definitions, there are three under Article 35.3, but there's also a further list that supervisory authorities, so the ICO, are required to produce. Now, that's based on European guidance and is currently within our DPIA guidance, and there are 10 intended process and operations in there. So if you were looking at likely to result in high risk and your processing is similar to what's described there, then you'll need to do a DPIA. If it's not on those lists, it doesn't get you out of the obligation entirely. There should be an objective assessment that you undertake to see whether your processing is likely to hit this threshold. And that doesn't mean a single high-risk event that's inevitable. It could be the result of a number of issues that, when taken together, could have a significant impact on an individual. And that might be wider than data protection and privacy. We could be talking about a loss of occupation, a loss of some kind of, or denial of some kind of opportunity, or even potentially putting them at physical risk and danger in terms of if this information was lost or it was disclosed.
Thank you. So what exactly will go into a DPIA?
Well, actually, what a DPIA would comprise of is specified under GDPR now. So whereas previously, when we were in the world of PIAs and we talked about good practice, we now have some key things that a DPIA needs to cover. So it has a RONSEAL test, if you like. Again, that's under Article 35. If we're talking about general processing, it's also covered for law enforcement as well under the Data Protection Bill. So what a DPIA needs to cover is it needs to be a systematic description of the intended processing, and the purpose for that processing should be part of that assessment. There also needs to be some form of assessment of the necessity and proportionality of what you plan to do. And our guidance does go into further detail about how you would undertake a necessity and proportionality assessment.
So by that, we're talking about, do you need to do this? And is how much data and how much processing you're doing of that data proportionate to those needs?
Absolutely. So we would be asking the same kind of questions we would always be asking in terms of, well, is there another less invasive way of getting the outcome you're looking for? And really, this is a general requirement for controllers more generally. So if you look at some of the other requirements around Article 24 and the requirements to ensure privacy by design, as we talked about earlier, then all this interlinks, really. So after any assessment of necessity and proportionality, what we're then looking at in terms of a DPIA is an assessment of the risks involved. Now, that assessment needs to include some elements of the measures taken to mitigate or control those risks. And these are really key points for data protection impact assessments, as we'll talk about later, because it's not just about identifying the potential harms in terms of their likelihood or severity. It's if that does come into the category of high risk, what appropriate measures can you take to mitigate those and reduce them? And when we're talking about appropriate here, for people familiar with Data Protection Act at the moment, we're talking about appropriate in a kind of Principle 7 security point of view. So this isn't, have you eradicated every possibility of risk? Have you gone to the utmost level in terms of cost and state of the art? It is proportionate to what you're proposing to do and effectively the resources you've got. But if you're a multinational, then appropriate is very different to if you're an SME or corner shop.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I guess the question is, why has the new data protection law put so much emphasis on DPIAs, and why do we want our listeners and businesses to be undertaking them?
As we said earlier, they're a helpful tool in terms of demonstrating your compliance with the principles of GDPR. And GDPR requires that in a much greater way than data protection ever did. So it is about this ability to demonstrate your compliance. And a data protection impact assessment is a great way of doing that, whether it's required or not. You will also come across some of the issues you will see with data protection impact assessments. You're also going to consider them depending on the lawful basis that you're relying on. So, for example, if you're looking at legitimate interests, maybe even consent, then some of these questions in terms of necessity, proportionality, is there another way of doing this? You're going to be asking those questions anyway. And some of this will very clearly link into some of the privacy information and how people can use their new data subject rights. So all of this links together.
Okay, so I can imagine a few of our listeners are out there, particularly if they're in smaller organisations, thinking that this is a new thing that they have to do that's mandatory. Is this not going to be burdensome? So what is the ICO's position on that? Do you think that this will be burdensome for people? And second half of that question, particularly if they're having to go back and retrospectively do things for their for previous projects that haven't had DPIAs done?
Well, taking the first point, I guess, saying earlier, this is mandatory in certain circumstances where this likely to result in high risk applies. That does require some level of assessment, but in terms of our guidance, we do have the checklist that controllers and processors can use, and some of that assessment actually could be not very labour intensive at all. There's some key questions really that you need to satisfy yourself of.
I think particularly from what you've been saying around the fact that actually in a lot of the preparation that people will have been doing, they will have to have been asking themselves these questions already, particularly like you said around lawful basis, in which everyone who processes will have to identify the lawful basis. So,
yeah, absolutely. And certainly if it's circumstances where you're relying on things like legitimate interests, which will require some form of assessment anyway. Mm. So a screening for a data protection impact assessment could be interlinked with that, because you're asking the same kind of questions. It's about necessity, it's about proportionality. Going back to your earlier point in terms of would everybody need to do this for their existing processing under data protection, our line on that is where there has currently been an assessment and you as the controller or processor are confident that that remains accurate in terms of your envisaged processing, then where there has been either a privacy impact assessment or other form of assessment, as long as that processing hasn't significantly changed, you wouldn't need to go revisit that. I guess the caveat to that, and we would say that about any form of impact assessment or risk assessment, is that they are living documents, they are there to be reviewed regularly. And even if you did a DPIA completely, you would still need to review that in the future. So what we would say is, where that assessment suggests that the processing has changed in terms of there's further information being used, there are other people who that information is shared with, if that pushes people to suggest that maybe we should do a DPIA, then obviously that's something we'd strongly encourage. Alternatively, if after doing the checklist, you're confident that you don't need to do one, again, because GDPR requires this accountability and this ability to demonstrate compliance, we would suggest that you retain any record where you've decided, no, we don't need to do this. And if you do have a data protection officer, it's important that that includes their advice as well.
So I think the key points of what you're saying there are always record any assessment so that you can say, yes, we thought about the risk and we thought about this and deemed that we didn't need one. And I guess another burning question on everyone's lips, Ian, will be, what happens if they decide not to do one, even if they really should be doing one?
Well, when it comes to data protection impact assessments and GDPR, that is part of, I think it's Chapter 4, which is the general obligations for data controllers and processors. Where there's been a failure, where an organisation should have undertaken a DPIA or sent it to us potentially for consultation, where that hasn't happened, then effectively they would be open to the potential of an administrative fine in terms of that failure under the obligation. And this particular penalty will be under the lower fine regime, so potentially up to a maximum of €10 million.
So you've just mentioned about ICO consultation. So who and when can consult with the ICO around DPIAs, and what can they expect from you?
Well, this is another obligation in certain circumstances that GDPR brings, which relates to data protection impact assessments. So where that risk has been assessed and where the outcome of that assessment is that residual risk remains unacceptably high. And in our guidance, when we talk about this, what we're saying is where a controller or where you can't reduce the risk you've identified to an acceptable level that you can sign off, then there is a requirement to consult the ICO. So whereas not all processing operations require a DPIA, not all DPIAs need to come to the ICO. We would always recommend and suggest that where possible, they should be published or a summary made available, but that in itself isn't a requirement. So in terms of consultation, where you find yourself in a situation where you have an unacceptable level of high risk, then you are required to engage with the ICO. And our guidance talks about how you can do that. So there will be a web-based form on the ICO website. And if you go to ICO website for organisation section, there should be some clear information there in terms of how that process would work. Once you do submit to the ICO, the GDPR and Data Protection Bill do require us to report back to you within a set period of time. So generally, for general processing under GDPR, you would expect a maximum of eight weeks between submitting a DPIA to us and getting a formal response. However, not every DPIA we receive would necessarily go through that route. We would be in conversation with people earlier than that to tell them whether it had been accepted or whether there was any kind of issues or points that we've identified which meant that we couldn't undertake that assessment.
And so if someone had submitted a DPIA to the ICO and it was going through the review, what could the potential outcomes of that be? Could you stop that project from taking place?
Now, we can potentially, as well as giving formal advice, use any of our powers under GDPR. And in certain circumstances, that can include a limitation or a ban on processing. So in the same way as, I guess, the fine levels get an awful lot of attention, potentially a DPIA consultation could result in a limitation or ban on that processing, theoretically. Now, there's a number of other scenarios that could also come out of that. We may have a different view in terms of some of the level of risk you've identified. We may suggest some areas that you might want to pursue further. We may agree with you in terms of, well, there may be a level of high risk, but actually depending on the type of processing and your kind of necessity and argument for doing it, it may be justified in the circumstances.
So I guess our advice to listeners and to people who work for organisations is don't be afraid to send your DPIA through to the ICO. As always, our main role is here to support organisations to get things right.
I guess what we're saying is that this requirement does exist. It is a statutory requirement in certain circumstances, so plan for it early, anticipate it. So if you are looking at new projects and if you think they're going to engage the requirement for a DPIA and potentially then some further engagement with the ICO, plan for that in your project life cycle.
Okay, Ian, so when might someone actually do a data protection impact assessment? For what kind of project?
Well, there's a number of scenarios where somebody might look at doing a data protection impact assessment. So this could be for a single kind of process and operational project, or you could have a single assessment that covers a number of similar or related projects. And really that would depend on the specifics of those projects. Alternatively, you could do an assessment to look at the privacy impact of a potential use of technology or new tool in that sense. So that could be something that potentially a processor may look at in terms of bringing a tool or capability to market. And this is a requirement under both general processing for GDPR as well as law enforcement. And the concept actually is also being applied to the upcoming e-privacy regulation as well. So it's not a concept that's going away.
So obviously when you refer to consultation, that's to do with stuff that's written into the legislation when people have to approach us with their DPIAs. But I guess there will be a lot of our listeners and people out there who may need a little support. Now, I imagine that we've got stuff on our website to help them, that they can still ring our helpline, use our live chat and access support in all the ways they usually would from us in order to get a little bit of advice or steer on their DPIA. Would that be right?
Absolutely. And if we're talking about organisations who this isn't something they would do every day, this is something that they're coming at fresh, if you like, then we do have more general kind of support in terms of some of our SME guidance. There's some reference to DPIAs in there, and there will be support from our current kind of customer contact type services as well. I guess on the other side of that, if there are organisations who've previously had contact with ICO around particular process and operations, or they've had a particular engagement with us, that will still be there. There will still be some engagement with policy in other parts of the office, such as assurance, etc. So those relationships will still exist. I think it's important to make the point that what we're talking about is a kind of formal, clear statutory requirement under the legislation. So discussions that have always been had between organisations and the regulator will still happen. It's just when you're talking about this particular scenario, then that will happen in a different way.
That's given me and the listeners a lot to think about. Thanks very much for today, Ian.
Thank you.